Welcome to the Spacious Unknowing Network, sunshine for your soul,
with Julio
and Jojo Rose.
We invite you to enter into ecological equanimity in the unified field of spacious unknowing.
We open and awaken to broaden your access to the soul rhythm in all of us.
We engage in the pilgrimage inward to feel the infinite love that beats in the rhythm of our collective soul.
We will guide you to new horizons and infinite love during our Inquire Within segment
to accept that you create your field.
I create my field.
And together, we create the unified field. Spacious Unknowing Network
with Julio
and Jojo Rose
starts now.
Aha! You are tuned in to Spacious Unknowing Network, sunshine for your soul. I'm Jojo Rose, here with Julio Rose. Today, we are speaking on the agency of providence. Julio, you're on.
I am. And today I'm speaking about Jojo's birth. She was born premature at 2 months early. And she only weighed 2 pounds, 13 ounces. So I was in a Catholic hospital in Boston, Dorchester, and so there were a lot of different nurseries for babies. And also, I had to stay in the hospital 5 days, no matter what. So they put me in a room that they weren't sure if I had an infection. So I didn't see Jojo for 5 days. And when I did see her, it was through a glass. I wasn't allowed to hold her or sing to her or rock her or be present with her the way any mother would like to do. And the nurse, by that time, she had gone down to 2.6 ounces. So the nurse was holding her in the palm of her hand. I could hardly believe it. It was such an experience. And I was with my husband, and both of us were just amazed at how tiny she was. And when we left the hospital, by the elevator door was a prayer of Saint Francis, and it was really, I read it and I was familiar with it, but I never learned it purposely because I like to read it and feel the sound. And so I decided that maybe we could go to the gift shop and get that prayer in a bookmark or something.
Yes.
And take it home. And so we did do that. And we had, Benny was great at making charts, you know, an artist, he could do any and all things that were beautiful and gave us a whole spectrum of what was happening with her every day if she gained an ounce or. So we talked to the nurses every day, and they loved that she was in their nursery because it was the observation nursery. And they had never had a baby that they knew she'd be with them 2 months. And they never had a baby for very long because it was always observation and the baby would leave. So they were thrilled to have somebody who was going to be with them for a while. And they laughed about her because she moved on. It was an isolate that she was in. She had been moved from an incubator to an isolate before I got to see her, and she went all over the place. She just, they'd say, who moved Lisa? And somebody would say, well, I didn't touch her. Well, I didn't. And they realized that she was moving herself all around that isolate. So they were certain she was going to make it. And what I recognized was that to not be able to hold her or talk to her, You know, I realized that she heard her brother's voices while she was with me. And now she didn't hear her dad's or her brother's or her grandmother or aunties that lived in the same house, big house. She didn't hear any of those voices. And I felt how that was really important. And I couldn't do anything about it. So I just really prayed for her to be happy and well, you know, and the nurses were wonderful. They were just so sweet and loving with her. And I trusted that she would feel that love and feel good, you know, being here. And so every time we, well, every day we called. Benny called from work, the nurses, and I called from home, the nurses. And we were always connected up to find out how she was doing. We started going every evening, but we realized that the boys needed us too. And we decided that since she didn't know we were there and we couldn't hold her, and the nurses were so present with her, that two or three times a week would work and it wouldn't take away anything from the boys. And they liked it. They were happy that we were, you know, they knew everything that was going on. And so, yeah, she was in there for 2 months, two full months. So she came home the 2 months after she was born, 2 months and 1 day. Yeah. So what was comical about that? I had two sons. Like Matt was 20 months and Jay was 20 months older than that. Whatever that was. And so it was, the doctor had wanted me to wear a mask and take it on and off, you know, and the boys, so the boys wouldn't affect her and make her ill. And it was like, excuse me, this is a family. You know what? That's not going to happen. I'm talking to me. I didn't tell him that.
Yes.
And so I had her home and she ate every 2 hours. So I was holding her and Matt is trying to push me. He wanted to sit where she was.
It's like,
and he wanted, and so I'm going, how do I do this? You know, every 2 hours. And Jay had insisted that we buy her a doll, JoJo a doll for, I guess for Christmas, but this was before then, but not that long before. And so I thought, well, that's crazy. I mean, well, we had the doll, and it was a bottle-fed and wet doll, you know. So the third day of Matt trying to get on my lap with you, and I picked up the doll, and I sat Matt in the chair, and I gave him the baby doll and said, feed her, too, while I'm feeding your sister. So he did, and he was enthralled with the whole idea, and he did it. And the next day I handed him the doll, he threw it on the ground, went to play with his brother. So that was over really fast.
Yes.
But it was so interesting that Jay had insisted,
yes,
on getting that baby doll, and it was used for a grand purpose.
Yes, it was.
And Matt was fine now, and but you still ate every 2 hours.
Yes.
You were making up for lost time.
Yes, so, I was.
Yeah, it was great to have you home, and the boys loved it. And so, and your whole family, aunties and grandmother and father and me and all of us. So that was your beginning. And during the first year, I took you to Children's Hospital for the clinic a couple times because I wasn't sure about your legs and feet and I wanted them to check everything.
Yes.
And they said you were fine. I said, thank you. Good. I'm happy to hear that. So we moved to Florida when you were 11 months old. And so we had new doctors to learn about and go to. And the doctor who had been with you at birth said we needed to take you for your eye exam when you were maybe 13 months. And so we did. And that led to us taking you to ophthalmologist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, he was a really good doctor, and he told us that you were blind in your left eye. It was 80 over 40, so that was a shock. I mm-hmm. thought I had prepared Benny the night before for all possibilities, but I didn't name that one. So that was like new to both of us, and but you know, I recovered quickly and said, you know what, doesn't matter, whatever happens, I'll be here, and I'll be here for whatever is needed.
Yes.
And so that was a wonderful decision, because it wasn't too long after that. It might have been, I guess, about not quite 2 years actually, that we went to get your shoes, and the young man who waited on us said, do you realize her left foot is shorter than her right foot by quite a bit? It might be her hip. I think you need to take her to an orthopedic doctor and find out.
Yeah.
And so we did. We called right away and made an appointment and took you. And you always charmed these doctors. Oh my God. It was something to behold. I never had any feminine wiles, so it was like, really? Is this how little girls act? Oh, dear. It was amazing. Anyway, talk about agency. Woo! And so Dr. Maxwell examined you, and then he asked me to take you to a pediatrician close by. It was in Melbourne. So I drove there, and we went to the Dr. Borland, who was a pediatrician, and he examined you, and he conferred with Dr. Maxwell. And then Dr. Borland told me that they had diagnosed you with cerebral palsy, and that what he mapped out my going to the clinic for one, oh no, I started out with Cleo, who was a physical therapist at the clinic, and she would teach me how to be with you and how to do the exercises with you. But she'd probably call on me to go 3 times a week till I really got the rhythm of it and yes. the feel of it. And so, and the other part of it was once a month, I took you to clinic to have them chart your progress.
Okay.
Dr. Maxwell would be there, Dr. Borland, and Cleo. And so that was all set out, and I felt really good about it and knew that it was going to work.
Yes.
And so when I got home and told your dad, he never could handle anything, anyone that was sick. He just couldn't handle any idea of sickness, and he just went ballistic and said, what? He was like, he went off, like he was really, really upset. And I said, Benny, let me tell you what Dr. Borland said. I feel really good about this. I can do this. We will do it together. She and I, and wherever you all in the family are together in it with us, you will be. And so I told him, and he still was very upset. And I said, you know what? Here's his number. Why don't you call him so that you can talk to him directly?
Yeah.
And then, you know, he didn't do that. But in any event, we did need to go to Cleo right away. So I think we went the next day, and she was wonderful. She was so easy to be with and such a good teacher. She was showing me and how to, mainly it was your left heel cord.
Yes.
And it had affected your right heel cord from the way you walked. And so I had to work both of them. usually in cerebral palsy, two limbs are affected. And in your case, it was mainly one, but it had affected your other limb. And you weren't retarded in any way, shape, or form, but you had a part of your brain that was damaged. And so, in my wanting to understand, because I tried to find books, there were none. It was the 60s and early 60s, and there was nothing that I could, use to learn what else besides what I was learning from the doctors and Cleo. And that was not like me. I love research and learning things that were sometimes off the beaten track. I would hear them differently. And in any event, I could feel that Cleo was a wonderful resource. And so the next morning, when I'm kneeling at your feet in the kitchen, we had a very big kitchen. And to me, it was a perfect place. You'd lie on the floor, and I would kneel at your feet, and I had to hold your foot in the palm of my hand and draw it up, draw the your heel, your
Draw the sole of my foot up, like hold my heel and draw my the sole of
yeah,
my foot
for
upward.
your to move, loosen your
The
heel
heel
cord.
cord.
That's what I was trying to say.
Lengthen the heel.
Yeah, lengthen it. So I did it, and I your foot was dead in my hand, and I'm going, that wasn't how it was yesterday. When Cleo showed me how, what did she do, and how was she with me? That what am I missing? Like, and I'm kneeling there, and I'm going, I don't want to hurt her, but there's no exit sign shining bright. Here I am. This is what I'm to do. So, you know what I need. So I just was quiet for a minute. And the next thing I knew, I went, think, think, think. The flow of life came into your foot. And I was able to work until you retreated back to the same place I had called you forth from, which was all brand new to me. And I began to, as, but you were the best for me to research with, because I could intuitively begin to get what was necessary for me to be with you while I was in this with you every day. So this was the first day, and I used this every time you retreated. And for me, it was always that I wanted to do this from 9 to 10. It was 1 hour every morning, 9 to 10. And so that's what we did. And then we went back to Cleo, excuse me, in a couple days. And then she said, you don't need to come back. You're doing great with the exercises. So once a week's plenty. And so that's what happened next. So I worked with you 5 days a week. Saturday, there was a show on TV called Batman and
Robin.
Robin, and you children loved it. And there
Yes, we
was a
did.
guy in it called Riddler, and Riddler walked on his heels. Well, you needed to do that. So we all walked around the house
Remember.
like the Riddler, like Penguin, I guess, and for that exercise. And you had no clue it was an exercise. You were
No,
just having fun.
I was having fun. I was laughing the whole way.
Yeah, and the same way I had the long board that was a 2x4, but it was long. It was about 6 feet long, and you had to walk with your arms out for your balance, one foot ahead of each other, so that you could, it was had to help with your balance.
Balance.
So we usually did that before, but I wasn't as, moved to be in that every single day. It was occasional, maybe 3 days a week instead of five, or whatever happened. But the actual every day was really important, and I felt it. And I felt how I began to realize that the brain-damaged part of your brain, we needed to create a new passage in your brain for it everything to work well. And I could feel it. I could feel like this was what was needed.
Yeah.
And I just knew I needed to stay with it, and I would intuitively receive exactly what I needed to do with you. And in the meantime, Cleo went to teach school to a lot of children who were in wheelchairs, and she invited me to take you, and I did, and I was aware that no, this wasn't the best place for you, and we would just continue doing what we were doing. And with that came a different therapist, and the difference in them was unbelievable. The new one didn't, she went through the motions. Thank God Cleo was there for me to learn from, because I could.
Yeah.
She had it. She knew what she was doing. It was clear. It was easy. It was wonderful. I've always been so thankful that she was first. And then with the new one, it was always going through the motions. But because I did this every day with you at home, I knew that you were fine.
Yeah.
And once a month, we would go, and you had to walk for them, and they would chart your progress. And that continued for, well, you were 2.5 when you were diagnosed. So when you were 3, always since you started walking, we would go to the park near where we had lived before, and in Florida. And you were, you'd drip to the ground like about every 500 feet, and you didn't drop, you didn't fall, you just dripped like, you know, someone let go of your strings, like you were a puppet or something. It was the strangest thing I'd ever seen in my life. So I would just go and steady you on your feet, and you would be fine. As long as I knew you were fine, we'd keep walking. And the park wasn't far. It was a small playground that the boys and you and I would go to. And it was strange to me, but it just, I don't know. And during the time that I was working with you, that still continued to happen.
Mm.
So 3 months into my being with you for the exercises, you dripped to the ground, and this wind wrapped around me, and I could not move, and I couldn't talk. And I just stood there, and you were waiting for me to come pick you up. And you finally knew I wasn't, so you began to pick yourself up.
Yeah.
And it was that day, but it took 3 times that day before I got it. It happened 3 times. The wind wrapped around me, and I had to watch you pick yourself up. And the 3rd time, same. And it wasn't until that evening that I went, oh, she needs to use her limbs. She needs to pick herself up so that she's joining with her will for this, to for the healing. And I got it. I really got it. And I went, wow, it took a lot for me to get that, you know. 3 times in one day, and such a strange way to have it happen, but it worked. That's all that mattered to me. It worked. And so you actually, within a week or two, you never dripped to the ground again. So it really did make a huge difference. And so it's amazing how simple life is. If you let it stay simple and don't try to complicate what it is that for me that I was had to be present with, but it had to be simple for me. And I had to be able to understand what this meant, what was happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
So.
Well, we are going to take a quick break. Stay with us, because on the other side, we're going to continue this communication mm-hmm. with the exercises, the physical therapy, and the way in which Julio was with me when I was a child. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
In body, in power, in soul. Activate the spirit within you in deep conversations of power, faith, grace, love, and forgiveness. On Soul Inspired Reflections, Ascension, a Humble Awakening of the Heart. Join me, your host, Gina Libido, every second Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. And find that even the chaos of your world makes sense and has meaning and purpose. Make a choice, be inspired, take action. For more information, go to soulinspired.org. That's soul-inspired.org.
It's time to tap into your divine self through angelic guidance. Join your host, Cindy Smith, and co-hosts in the Angel Empowerment Show from I Can't to I Can, airing every Monday, 6 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn from four of the best angel empowerment practitioners in the field. Together, they will share experiential teachings and offer live on-air professional angel card readings and much more. For more information, visit CindySmithAEP.com. Hey you! Have the bumps in life's road taken away your passion, your fire, and your power? What would you do if you could take it all back? Tune in to The Take Back Show with Tiffany Watkins, strategies to take back your control. Tiffany has 25 years experience in business and leadership roles and will teach you how to grab a hold of your life and make it work for you. Streaming live every second and fourth Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific on YouTube, Facebook, and TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tune in to Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bazzani, your ally for addiction, the first Monday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join us and engage in this epic journey of how to own your power and change your perception of addiction while we revolutionize the approach that ensures mental health as we address a worldwide epidemic. Take the steps that lead you towards an incredible life of maximum resilience. We do recover. Visit MyResilienceCoach.com.
Hey everybody, oh my goodness, we have got talk radio for all of us.
Really, thank you for blazing the trail for women in talk radio and just being such an inspiration to me and so many other people. What you're doing is so awesome, and you know, without people like you there to like really step out of the box and go for it, I don't know if someone like me would have ever ended up here, but I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, I just want to thank you for everything you're doing. You're one of my major inspirations.
Aloha, we're happy you have stayed with us. So before the break, Julie O. Rose was sharing therapy that she was in with me from my cerebral palsy diagnosis. And one part of it, she recognized after it happening three times that I had to pick myself up from the ground. And what I recognized this time when she said it is that I had to use every single part of me. And the way that I did it, describing it to you, it's I would get on my hands and knees first, and then I would lift my bottom in the air, like people when they do yoga, the downward dog, and then I would walk my hands back toward my feet and then stand up. Now, this took me a while because I also had to keep my balance. But the wonder of that is I was using every part of me to do that. And because it took so much focus for me to be in it, I couldn't retreat back inside of my head. I had to stay fully engaged. So all of me was
working with me, and my will was definitely engaged because I didn't want to stay on the ground.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's great, Jojo, because I know that's new understanding.
It is new understanding. So
I'm thankful we're doing this tonight because this is important.
And I also want to add that because we were in that when I was a child, that gave me the love for exercise. It gave me the love for activity and movement.
Yep, it did.
Because we had fun.
Yeah.
And it felt good to be able to move and play and be with you and dad and my brothers. And it felt really, it was freeing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Because we went other places and had fun, but it was all part of you each, you know, enjoying your childhood. Yeah.
Yes.
So the next thing was, it came close to when you needed to start school.
Yes.
And so there was no public kindergarten at that time. And so Matt had gone to the Little White Cottage, and
yes,
it was a really good private school. And so I went there to enroll you. And just in the little time that you were there, you didn't want to do the exercises anymore.
Yeah.
I had made a pact with myself the very first day that if ever the day came that you said, I don't want to do the exercises anymore, we'd be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the day. You came home, usually had a nap after your, because you only went for the morning.
Yeah.
So we ate, you had a nap. And that day you said to me, no, Mommy, I don't need to do the exercises and I don't need a nap. And so, oh, okay, she's graduated. And the other part of it was I did notice that you weren't walking the way you had before you started school. So I took you to Dr. Maxwell because I felt what it was and I wanted to get confirmation on
yes.
it. He said, take her to the store today, Mom, and get her some low-top shoes because you wore high top with steel in the foot, shoes, white.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody else in school wore those.
No.
And so I did. I took you to the store, and the only thing you had in the store, because you had a very wide foot, double D, I think, or something.
E's.
E? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Thank you.
I'm glad you had a very, very wide foot.
So the only thing you had in the store that would fit you were saddle shoes. Well, that's the last thing in the world I would ever have wanted to put on my daughter, but he put them on you and you did not want anyone to take them off.
I love them. And I remember, and it was like, They were normal shoes.
Absolutely. And I did get that. I got that part. But anyway, he was so wonderful, the guy in the store. I did not go that day prepared to buy you shoes. He said, she's got to wear these home. You cannot take those shoes off her feet. No, 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 no. You come back and pay me tomorrow. I said, okay. And so sure enough, we left and you had those shoes on, and oh my goodness, you turned around and smiled at him, and he was in heaven. It was like he was so thrilled that he had made a little girl happy. You know, he was sweet, sweet man. And it was really beautiful. But you wore them every day, and I noticed that you were getting your I thought when you said you didn't want your exercise anymore, I thought, well, I'm going to go to school and look on the playground to see what's on there, because I have a feeling there's a lot of things that were allowing her to continue in her exercises. Sure enough, because Mr. Wickham, the man who his wife owned the White Cottage, but he had made all of the things that you all played on.
Yes.
And they were all things that you needed. and to for this to continue for you. And it was so delightful. I just was so happy. And I was thankful I had decided in the beginning that when you said you were ready,
yes,
that would be over. So you were probably 5 and a half when you received a clean bill of health from Dr. Borland, Dr. Maxwell, and Cleo came back. I didn't know that. And I walked in, I think the next day, to meet with her, and you ran and jumped up onto her table, and she went, "Mama, you've been working hard." I thought, "Oh no, what?" That was kind of foreign to me. And she said, "This could have gone either way. She could have ended up in a wheelchair. I knew that the day I met her. If you had not done the exercises with her, I have so many children who are in wheelchairs, and it breaks my heart." And it broke my heart when she said it. And then I remembered, JoJo, every clinic day we went to, all the children were in wheelchairs and there were no parents there. I was the only parent. And I'm not a judge, so I never judged anybody. So I never thought about they were there alone. And I never thought about it until Cleo. And my heart ached for her because she was so heartful and such a beautiful being. And I know that was really difficult for her.
Yeah.
And for me, I only knew what I had to do. I didn't look around to see what other people were doing or not doing. That wasn't my purpose for being here. But I was very thankful that Cleo got to see you and know, because I had no idea that how much she needed that.
Yeah.
And she really did.
Yeah.
And I always think about her with such fondness. She was such an integral part of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I've said it to you, but I'm going to say it. Thank you for being with me this way.
Well,
and caring that much and loving that much that you were in it and you knew that there was no out.
There isn't. In life,
there isn't. No, there isn't.
For me, there isn't. And that's just the way it is, JoJo. I'm not special. That's how it is for me.
I know. I understand that. But to feel so loved and cared for in a deep, deep, deep way is...
That was the intention.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, thank you. You got it.
Yes.
Now, I want to mention something that when JoJo, one other part of her was that she had a lot of ear infections. And I would always wonder why. And she had fetishes, food fetishes. And I worked with her on that to see if she would eat foods that might be more nurturing and give her what you needed for your so you wouldn't have those ear infections anymore. And I decided when you were 5 and a half or 6 that I would start you on a regimen of vitamins. I thought, well, maybe that's what she needs. If she won't eat the foods that will give her that, maybe she needs the vitamins. And I read a book by someone who was well known and knew a lot about vitamins, and I decided I would start doing that.
Yeah.
So I had them out on the table for you, and I called Matt and Jay to the table, and I said, "It's time for your vitamins." And they said, "Mom." Oh, I knew I was in for one. Whenever I heard that, "Mom." Sure enough, every time you gave JoJo her antibiotic, you told her that it would make her all better. You didn't do that with us. We didn't take antibiotics. What you need to do with her as you give her these vitamins is let her know how her body really heals. Oh. Okay. It's like, oh, yes. If I didn't get it from doing the other, I had to get it from here, right?
Yeah.
It was so comical because they were always so serious.
Yeah.
And then they would laugh because they knew that I didn't know. And they were, I was getting it, and they knew that. I had such good helpers in you and Jay and Matt because you were so intuitive and helped so much with my own life. And it was so beautiful. It was just, wow, just a wonder.
And it was beautiful the way you listened and loved and set the tone in our home.
Yeah, but you know what? I made that decision when I was, oh, I don't know. Well, I made the decision to mother intuitively with Matt and Jay in Boston. So that started there with them. But one day I had noticed that a lot of people thought that they didn't get toys when they were children, so they were going to smother their children in toys.
Oh.
And I thought, well, what do I think I didn't get that I would want to give my children so that they have it?
Yeah.
And I just sat with it because I really wanted to understand. And I received, I always wanted someone to listen better. Mm-hmm. Ah, so I need to listen. I need to be a good listener. And it really served me very well because when you're able to listen, you get so much more from the one you're listening to, and they get so much from you listening. It's amazing. If people understood that, they'd all be great listeners because it is so, it's wonderful. It's so fulfilling. And, you know, I listened and watched what happened to people from me listening. Mm-hmm. And they would say things they would never have said ever anywhere to anyone else. And I learned that. And, you know, with you children, you began to share truth with me in ways that I didn't know was possible. And then I thought, well, that's what I did. So, of course, it's possible.
Yes.
As a child,
as a child, yes, yes.
And so that was funny. Yeah, so it was always just wanting to understand the way to live in this situation, whatever that happened to be, because we don't know what we don't know. And if I practice it over here, it doesn't mean it's going to work over here.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, it isn't, because there isn't the same kind of energy that someone had when they did it here.
It's not a simple repeat. Yeah.
No, a repeat never is no. Very good. But no. Most people don't know that. And they don't understand that that is why there's not the energy in it. Mm-hmm. That would have been there originally when they first uncovered it, discovered it, or it began to flow through them, or whatever we would say. So they don't understand that. And it's really important to be fresh and new with everything. And that's why when you said, I don't need my exercises anymore. Yeah, great. Perfect.
But even back when you first heard of the diagnosis and you went to Cleo, and the next morning you're like, you had to listen in, which then moved you to being with me the way that you were, that, and then me dripping to the ground and you 3 times in a day being stopped. That's the listening in again too, but allowing what occurred, you went in with for the understanding. And it was such a huge gift and huge.
Yeah. But you just described the way spacious unknowing works. Mm. And today people would call it quantum. Yeah. Quantum.
Yeah.
That is what it is. But it really is very quick. What would take a long time is shortened in time because the fullness of, let's say, who we are is in it. And it just makes it go quickly.
Yes.
And it's the only way I've known how to live. So, but if somebody isn't in that, it doesn't bother me a bit. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I do know what you're saying.
And it's fine because everyone is different and I can appreciate all those differences. So do you want to tell about when you were pregnant with your first son?
Sure.
About the isolate?
Yes. I think I was around 28 and I was pregnant with my first son. And I don't remember how far along I was. I think I was pretty far along, maybe 7 months. And my skin started really hurting. And I would rub my hand on my skin. It was mainly my thigh, my leg. And it hurt so bad. It was like someone taking sandpaper and rubbing it on your skin. And it was like, what is going on? I really needed to understand, but it hurt. Couldn't touch. And I started to have what people commonly call flashbacks. And I was feeling myself in the isolate and completely overstimulated in a way that I'm going to describe it the best way that I know. So I'm laying in this little box, which is how it felt to me. And the reason I moved around so much is because, well, where's my family? I want to go home to my family. So I kept moving. Okay, I'm going to go home. I'm going to get out of here. And I'd move and I hit the wall of the isolate. So, okay, well, let me try this again. And I'd move and I'd hit another wall of the isolate. So there was that. And I could easily say to you that I felt abandoned. I wasn't abandoned, but it's what I felt in the moment. And the reason I felt that is I was a big ball of pain. I felt like I had nowhere to go. So the lights were way too bright for my eyes. My eyes burned. The sheets in the isolate rubbed on my skin like sandpaper. But the other part of that is they would get wrinkled. So when they would get wrinkled, it was so uncomfortable. My breathing felt labored. My nose, like it may not have ran all the time, but it just, everything hurt. Everything hurt. And the nurses were really sweet and loving, but there was one doctor that was so, his voice was so gruff and grating. And if I could give you an explanation, the best would be that everything inside of me was overstimulated. Mm-hmm. It was too big. And I had no way of, I guess there was a part of me that sometimes like shut down because I couldn't filter everything that was coming at me. I was extremely sensitive. And I was thankful to have had that experience being pregnant with my first son because it helped me to understand me better. It helped me to understand when certain things happened in my life, why I felt the way that I did. It was like a going to the default program of being overstimulated. So it really helped me to understand me and recognizing, well, I don't have to be a big ball of pain anymore. So it really was a godsend. It kind of shocked me when it happened. And I had to know how to be with it. I remember talking with you and needing to understand. And I was so loved by the nurses. And then I came home to a family who was so loving and kind. And I've had to learn in my life how to accept and receive that love.
Yeah. And I remember you as a child. waking up at night and yelling because there were wrinkles in your sheet. So I would get up and I would clear, you know, smooth it, even though there wasn't a wrinkle there. And I didn't understand why you thought there was. But I did one time remember that you were naked in your isolette.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't put clothing on you, and because your skin hadn't yet fully developed. So I could understand when you told it, when you were pregnant with Joshua, I could understand what you felt.
Yeah.
And I didn't when you were young and would, you know, get upset, wake up and be upset. And no matter what I did with the sheets, they were still the same.
Yeah, and I remember as a child waking up almost hysterical,
yeah,
and not understanding it. And it wasn't till I was an adult that I thought, oh, that's how the sheets and the isolate felt to me.
And that made sense to me when I found out what, you know, when with Josh, when you were pregnant with him and saw and beheld it. I was thankful because so often we need some kind of help.
Yeah,
that's bigger than we would imagine we needed. And I felt you were receiving that.
Yes.
By remembering, you know, and talking and telling it and understanding it when you were talking. So it was a very healthy.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because each aspect to what I felt in the isolate over the years, I've come to understand have been representative of something in my life and the way in which I lived, that now I've chosen a very different life.
Yeah, exactly.
And living from the flow. And so it's, you know, to sit here and share this way with no emotion, no, it's pretty wonderful.
Yeah, I agree.
To feel so in clear whole and clear inside of myself.
Yep.
And to know that no matter what somebody undergoes, no matter how they may feel about what's happening in their life, change is possible.
Yeah.
Healing is possible.
Yep.
It's so beautiful. And I am grateful for this life and understanding.
Yeah. And that is true. You know, no matter what has created the trauma or the upset or whatever we would call it, overstimulation, which I'm sure has happened to a lot of children. There is a way for it to be unfolded and healed, but the person has to want to do whatever the work is called for to be in it for that, because it does call for someone to be at home.
Yeah.
And the other time that you did breathe and were in the isolate again, you had three boys and you were just reliving it. And I sat beside you and said, no, you're not reliving it. Just come home, but come here now because your breathing is labored and you need to be here.
Yeah.
So breathe deep like you can now.
Yeah.
And
I did.
Here. Yeah.
And I did. And I really, it was a little scary initially.
Yeah. You were
because
scared.
I was scared because
it took,
you know, it took me over. And, and what I shared with you is what I felt. But this time I was re-feeling it in my body, my nose, my eyes were burning.
Exactly. Like, you took it on.
Yeah, I did take it on. And when you said that, it was like, okay, I need to calm down and let it go. And it took me a while. It did take me a while, but I did it.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful that you were there to talk me through it because it was a very intense experience. And it's in life, it is not fun to get so attached to something that is physical. It doesn't have to be that way. And you showed me that in that instance, that I didn't have to be attached to what I was feeling in my body. I could let it go, but I had to be willing to do that. I had to be willing to breathe through it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wasn't talking to you about the physical. You're talking and saying that, but I just was Making sure you were breathing.
Yes. No, I know. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Life is wonderful.
Yes, it is. Every day, full of wonder. Well, we have come to the end or the close once again. Thank you for being with us. Have a wonderful, wherever you are, have a wonderful evening, a wonderful morning, a wonderful day, and may your week be filled with joy and laughter and love and gratitude.
Yes.
We will see you next Monday, 7 p.m. Pacific time, right here with JoJo Rose and Julie O. Rose, Spacious Unknowing Network, sunshine for your soul. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Spacious Unknowing Network, sunshine for your soul,
with Julie O.
and JoJo Rose.
Join us again for life-affirming communication
every Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific time on TransformationTalkRadio.com
so that you can bask in the rays of infinite love.
Access Soul Rhythm to tap into your real being for your heartbeat in the rhythm of your soul.
Feel it guide you to new horizons and unlimited infinite love. For more information about
Julio
and JoJo Rose, visit spaciousunknowingnetwork.com. That's spaciousunknowingnetwork.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.